Okay, come on up, please.
So right now we need John O., Jim Wittenberg, and Bruce Hall. Come on up. Mr. Go ahead and go with Chang Sim. I think we need a third one if Mr. Sim's here. Okay.
Good morning. Go ahead, Jim. I think you're ready to start.
Bye. Yeah, I just want to catch my breath for a minute.
Okay, sure.
I have emphysema now.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, John. Please. Yes. Just give us your name.
Stand or sit?
No, sit and just give us your name and proceed. Thank you.
My name is Bruce Hall. I am a 90-year-old retired attorney, so I'm interested all around. I came here to support something which I did not see up in your reader board. I haven't heard from anybody here today, and I haven't heard from anybody for a long time, and that's a topic which is I designated as Free Portlandia when I did an assumed business name like that some years ago. Then I continued my practice shamefully. I finally got around to this again. Today, here with all this talk that is going on about the Portland building, poor old Portlandia is not mentioned as usual. My understanding of Portlandia's attachment is some kind of cement block on the second floor that helps spread and support her weight, but I don't know that. I've never seen any plans. However, I have been trying to figure out how to get citizen involvement, as the last speaker was talking about, in this process. I've gone to the Oregonian because the Oregonian for a long time has more closely followed Portlandia than any other paper has. And the Oregonian really came to the point where they were saying, well, we've got to either raise or fix up Portland, fix up the building. And I sort of from this today gather that fixing up the building is the way where it's going to go. It's not going to be raised. At the time I got excited about it, the possibility existed that the building would be raised. Very poignantly, what would happen to Portlandia? Somehow or another, it's gotten under the radar. Right here now today, I'm simply asking you, I'm going to try, if the city does not do what I suggest, to get going on a poll, a citizenry, well-designed poll, to see what the citizens think about moving to Portlandia. In my case, my vote is solidly for going to the waterfront and facing on a fairly large podium, so more people on the east side see it, or her. But in any event, that's what I hope the city might do. That's why I'm here today to say that, would the city consider a poll to bring in the people here, the citizens, on what they would like to see done with Portlandia? She's not going to just disappear from the earth. We've got to do something about that beautiful statue. And as I say, my own particular vote is for the waterfront for all the reasons that former Mayor Bud Clark kind of touched on at the 30th birthday the other day. And that is, he started out by talking about the marine background and how she arrived and so forth, probably from his bird's eye aboard a kayak, but nonetheless, he said it. And it just shows us in our bloodstream, why not do something about Portlandia now, not 2021? And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Chang Sim, owner of the Bentos & Co. in the Portland building. Thank you, Commissioner Mandelbritz, thinking about our situation. I'm here to tell our situation, if you guys know about it. Because of all this planning and then talking about this renovating the building, our business value dropped to zero. We can't sell it. And we become basically a hostages until things get resolved. So, and obviously, Fred Miller doesn't have the power to help us unless you guys say, go ahead. So please give him more power to him to help us this is the only our only business to generate the income to pay my mortgages and raising my three boys. My 17-year-old, he'll be a senior. He's a senior. He'll go to college. And all these things, no future for me. My five-year lease end up February, and then the city will give us like a month to month, which is a death sentence to the small business. So I don't know if you guys thinking about our situation. And it happened to be you guys helping city kids. I don't know what's going on, but there's no talk about helping three small business, minority owned. I don't know what's going on here. So I want to get some answer from you guys.
Thank you for coming and making sure that we're all aware of your situation. So obviously, Fred is aware of it, and you're a valuable part of our local neighborhood here, and we appreciate you having you there. So thank you, appreciate you being here.
Yeah. So
we'll obviously will be back in touch with you as a tenant in the building as this proceeds, and work with you as best we can.
Thank you. I'll speak one more then.
Please.
You guys are talking about helping people facing the homelessness and apartment situation. The apartment rent owners raising 7%, 10%, so they just can keep up with those rent high. And you are also the rent road. And set a good example to those other people. So, instead of waiting us to lose our business, which is led to the homeless for us, then we end up in the doorstep of the city hall, then you're going to help us. That's not the way I want to see, and that's not the way other people want to see from the city council.
Very good point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jim.
Mayor and city council members, my voice has changed a little bit over the last few years, but I hope you can hear me.
Just give us your name, Jim.
Jim Wittenberg, I'm sorry. I've been before these hearings for 50 years now, almost 50 years. I started with Senator Morris and Senator Hatfield and Senator Hartung here in Oregon, who's died recently, and most of these people are all dead. I guess I'm next. I don't think I'm going to last until this building is built and put up. But I do have a feeling about this that I learned about this hearing on the from the Portland Tribune on Thursday, October 15th, that you were going to do this. I have tried really pretty hard for me to get some information about this from your offices. It's been almost a complete roadblock to get it. I've talked to different people. I've asked them for information, and very few people have offered to help in any way to learn this. We talk almost every night at my living arrangement, and I don't see this group caring very much what the public thinks. We're going to build this building, and we're going to do it our way, and we'll let you know when we decide what's going to happen. And I think that this is kind of the same attitude that I reached back in 1978 when we put the property tax amendment on the ballot. Nobody really cared in government about it until it was on the ballot. And it was reducing the amount of taxes for property. It was up to $35 a thousand here in Portland. What I see, I'm not against moving this building, but I care about the people that are in the building. They're going to come down if we have an earthquake in the next few years. I think we ought to move them right now, as soon as we can, and then worry about replacing the damn building. You know, buildings are buildings, but people's lives matter, and I think the public employees' lives matter. I think you ought to think about them. I've been trying to get you to think about the people of Portland, not the buildings of Portland first. People first, building second. And it doesn't seem to register anywhere. I've done my level best to get you to do that. I've been back from the wars since I've had the stroke and the heart attacks for 3 or 4 years now. But I don't want to die here thinking that my nieces are in this town, and there are 8 children who are in this town, and their husbands that are in this town, and my brother that lives up here in the West Hills, are all going to be subject to whatever you decide here. They ought to be part of the process. They ought to be brought into it. And this gentleman's right here when he says that we're not doing that. Senator Morrison and Senator Hatfield would turn over their graves if they saw how little the public matters to the people that are in power today. I know that because I worked with both of them back in the 70s. And it seems a real problem that we don't move these people and get them out and take care of their safety first and worry about putting up a building. We can have buildings all over town. It doesn't matter. Just build something that's going to stay, something that's not something that's supposed to. As last thing I want to say is in the 1968 Republican Convention in Miami, and your dad might have been there. I don't know because I met seeing a couple of times in the Congress when I was there. I went there in 1969. I was there for 5 years, and I worked for a couple of congressmen. But when Senator Everett Dirksen, who was Senate Majority Leader at that time, I remember his statement about government. He says, well, 1 million here and 1 million there, and pretty soon we're talking about some real money. Now it's 100 million there and 100 million over here. Now we're not even thinking that's real money. That's got to be paid for. And I don't see why that we're not valuing that. I read this article by Jim Redden. You know, I've worked with his dad in the state legislature, and I don't see how this is how we got to learn about this. This is how we got to learn. We should have more advance warning before we start voting on resolutions. I like Mr. Miller. I think he's a good guy. That's what I said. But we got to be informed a little bit before we start voting on resolutions that cost $195 million. That's a lot of millions of dollars. I don't know if you guys recognize that, but you know, we got to pay for that. I got to pay. Well, I probably don't. I'm retired now without it. But the people that are still working got to pay for that.
Jim, thank you. We did have a public work session back in August, but okay, maybe not everybody knew about it.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Next three are James Posey, Crystal Ilinski, and Rosa Martinez. And then they'll be followed by Maurice Rahman, Marcella Alcantar, and Michael Birch.
Okay. Come on up. Go ahead, Crystal. I think you can be on first while everybody else is getting organized here. Crystal, go ahead. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. My name is Crystal Ilinski. I'm really glad to be here, able to be here, and I represent 10,000. I am really struck by, well, it seems like the testimony thus far is struck also by the same images, that the team was talking about. The wordage was really strange to me, talking about the benefits and the development of the community and life-threatening situations, and all I could think about the entire time was what we could do with that $195 million for the homeless. We're putting maybe $2 million there, $5 million there for the homeless. Oh, a state of emergency, let's put another couple million. The last time I attended one of these meetings that for some reason you think that most residents of Portland can make it to, the money went straight into construction of a building that it was right in my neighborhood that I've been evicted from and homeless for a year. And the rent there is $3,000 when I saw it on Craigslist. So that was a bit shocking. We keep being told that this is great for us, but I agree that the residents are the citizens, but we don't know what's going on with this, and there's been a lot of talk for a long time. So when Tom said, Well, Andre was talking about the life-threatening situations, and Tom says that he's never worked with a better team. Now, if this was my team, and the way that they're speaking today, it doesn't sound like it's organized or planned very well. I would get rid of the team if it was mine. We're not ready to make any decisions on this, but I think that my suggestions were pretty simple, and they could be implemented immediately. But I want you to pay attention to the homeless situation, what is really life-threatening with people losing their jobs and their houses, and why would we put money into this right now, especially when it's a bit hypocritical with all the shoddy construction that's just everywhere now. Nothing seems like it's permanent. So because Portlandia has become such an icon, and it was built in order to get us on the map. We all know that. And a lot of tourists come here and say they want to see Portlandia. Well, I think maybe we could start a social media, put money into, you know, donate to the redevelopment of this building and fix it up and save the lives of the people that work there for the city of Portland. Let's start that campaign right now.
Thank you. Thanks very much. James, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor and commissioners. You all know me as James Posey, and I have represented many groups, but this morning I'm representing myself as a citizen, and my comments are not from any particular group. But when I saw this resolution, I had to come and talk about it a little bit because I see the red flags. Mr. Mayor, with all due respect to you, sir, this resolution does not, from my perspective, mention the commission that you created a month ago and the City Council signed off on it. There's no mention of that in this resolution. There's also no mention of the Office of Equity in the whole process. And quite honestly, it's disturbing to me to see these sort of resolutions come to Council and there's no collaboration or no sense of synergy about these organizations centered around equity working together. To me, that's a huge issue, and it speaks to the leadership of how we get this done. So I just want to say that from the outset. Secondly is I've never seen a resolution relative to so many vague concepts and expressions. When Tom was up here, go back a long day, he looks younger than he was when he was a TriMed. But when he's talking about brick and mortars, he's talking about clear expectations about costs, budgets, et cetera. When you all talk about the equity, then it's not precise. It has no relevance to dollars. There's no economic lens on what the outcomes might be, et cetera, et cetera. How is that? Because brick and mortar is important, but as the gentleman said earlier, people are important. So you really want to get some value for your expenditure of funds relative to trying to deal with this longstanding issue. Then, you got your Office of Budget and Finance proposing this stuff. And really, you've got an auditor's report that talks about their inability to implement and execute anything relative to equity and or minority contractor participation. And, I'm not trying to cast any aspersions, but the facts are the facts. When you fail in something, you don't get rewarded by getting a resolution or any other sort of accommodation for not achieving your particular goals. So the structure and participation of this resolution, is really a sad commentary on what we're doing around this thing. It's just not organized in a way that really makes any sense. And the public sees this, whether you guys know it or not. They know the left hand doesn't appear to know what the right hand is doing. There's no substance in the outcomes and the ability to produce something that's going to be meaningful for the community. So I would suggest to you that you go back to the drawing board. This particular resolution should be tabled. And go back and get, like you said, let's see what the CPAs are really doing. Let's drill down on the numbers. Let's see how many consultants are benefiting from this versus contractors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Let's get that data so we can make a good decision about any resolution going forward.
Well, thank you. I'll get Fred to respond later to that question. Please. Or that criticism. The call for bids is the first resolution. The third one is probably most relevant to your point. So I'll make sure that he responds later.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Mr. Posey?
Yes.
I shared your concerns. I'm noting that the resolution, the third one, directs the Office of Management and Finance to come back to Council with a recommended proposal no later than May 1st of next year. Mm-hmm. So I certainly find your comments very cogent, and I'm sure that the Mayor will now direct the Commission to be involved in the development of that proposal and also looking at a broader public.
My assumption they would be, but we'll get Fred to come back and just put that on the record.
Yeah, put it on the record. Make sure it's a part of the going on the front end as opposed to the middle and the back end.
And I particularly appreciate your mention of the Office of Equity and Human Rights, and I'm sure that they'll be involved as well. Thank you for pointing those two issues out.
Thanks very much. Okay, next three.
The next group is the Equitable Contracting and Purchasing Commission, Rosa Martinez, Maurice Rahman, Marcella Alcantar, and Michael Abert.
Come on up.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Good morning, Commissioners. And so as we're getting set up, let me just provide some background on why we're here. This morning, I'm here as the chair of the Equitable Contracting and Purchasing Commission.
Tell us who you are, Brian.
With me this morning, I have the commissioners of the Equitable Contracting and Purchasing Commission. I have four of them with me. I have Michael Birch, who is the executive director of the Pacific Northwest Regional Council. That's not right?
I'm a representative.
Okay. Of the Pacific Northwest Regional Council.
Got a promotion, and Fred got a promotion.
We also have Rosa Martinez, owner of the PMG Abatement and Demolition Contractor. We also have Maurice Rahman, president of O'Neill Electric. And we also have Marcella Alcantar, president of Alcantar and Associate. And if I said that wrong, Marcella, you can correct me.
Good.
Okay, it's good enough.
It's going to get.
So just some background on the commission. The commission was officially formed by council to advise the council which city efforts are most directly related to increasing minorities and women on city contracts, increasing minorities and women in the workforce on city projects. And we've had several commissions, commission meetings, and most of those have been well attended. Last night we had State Representative Lou Frederick with us, so that there have been some good discussions around issues facing the minority and women contracting. One of the things that that has been a struggle for us is to try to get good data in terms of what are the baseline numbers. Because one of the things in terms of in order to increase the numbers, we need to know where we're starting from. So we've been trying to develop some baseline numbers. But around that, one of the things that the commission moved to last night is they wanted to actually start taking some action. And one of the things that came up was a discussion around the CBA. So today, we have four commissioners here. It was a unanimous decision last night to move forward with three recommendations. One is specifically related to the CBA, and the other two are related to the implementation of the CBA. So let me start with the first one. The first one is the deferment of the resolution as it is written. So it was a unanimous vote last night to defer the resolution. I'm going to go through all three of them, and then I'm going to ask each one of the commissioners to speak to the specific recommendation. Secondly, the commission voted unanimously to ask City Council to implement certain audit recommendations regarding the city's contracting processes that the auditor recommended. And then thirdly, it's around staffing, support staffing of the commission. So those are the three recommendations that the commission is going to make recommendations to City Council. And so with that, we'll let the commissioner speak.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to go first.
So is it on?
Yes, it is.
Well, good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm here, as Bryant said, as a commissioner on the ECPC. And I'm here as a representative to ask you to defer on the resolution number 3, directing the Office of Management and Finance to develop a proposal dedicating an amount equal to 1% of the construction budget for community enhancements and opportunities and benefits. Someone mentioned earlier how vague that was, and it strikes me as something I still can't figure out what that means. However, there is a model CBA and a resolution that was signed in 2012. It was developed after more than 4 years by a collaboration of a host of community members and stakeholders. I believe there were over 30 involved in that collaboration. There were two projects that the model CBA was modified to utilize on the Kelly Butte Interstate Renovation Project, which as of today are 90% complete. The Kelly Butte is done. The remaining project is 90% complete. The numbers that are in surpassed the goals that were set at the outset. The numbers that are in are amazing by any account. I think we've done a few presentations to community on what those numbers actually equate to in terms of contractors, minority contractors, and the workforce. This is a formula that we believe is a recipe for success, and we would urge you to not defer to multiple other imitations of what the model CBA is, but to use the CBA intact because it's a proven vehicle for success. The Metropolitan Workforce Alliance, which is MOWI, would be happy to provide you with a presentation at the December Council, if that's what you'd like to see. We've been attempting to provide this data to you for quite some time, but have been prevented by numerous barriers. But the data is amazing. There are a number of community folks who would be happy to testify to how they participated in the process. And I might mention that this is not a union agreement. It's an agreement that serves the entire community. I would conclude by asking the council to review the data before the data from the CBA and the other proposed community benefit plans and other plans in the community before deciding on this resolution. I believe that you will be very impressed by those numbers. And I urge you to use the formula that's in place on the resolution, because without having that particular formula, it's doomed to failure.
Mr. Birch, first, yes. I know it's going to be a long morning and probably going to be here all afternoon in council, but this is critically important, so we're going to take the time to get it right. First of all, you've given me the presentation on the data,
right?
And I've asked that data. That data has been submitted to procurement, and as you know, we've asked procurement that is tasked with assessing the track record of the CBA to evaluate the data. You've prepared some data from the community. The city is going to evaluate that and other data and report to council. So to your first point, the city is taking very seriously the information that the group has put together, and I appreciate the briefing you gave me. To the second point, though, about deferring on the resolution, and I'm going to ask this to Fred when he comes back, but you're hearing a tension in this hearing between wanting to get it right on opportunity and contracting, but also wanting to put a hard cap on the cost and launch the process. And one of the challenges that is occurring to me as I'm listening to the excellent testimony is that for some, they cannot be resolved today. And so one of the options will be to defer 6 months to a year deciding on the fate of the building, which will bring Mr. Wittenberg back with a lot of vinegar, because we would be postponing. Or we would launch a process but agree to have the right people at the table working out the contracting piece. The resolution, as I read it, is thin on specifics. And so someone has to come and prepare what is our expectations and what does accountability look like. But it is very clear in terms of cost. It's 1%. So if as you look at this proposal, can you separate cost from the specifics? In other words, can the council move forward today agreeing to allocate the money with a process to determine how it will be invested? Because otherwise, we're, you know, I've got a couple of my colleagues saying that there has to be precision on the overall cost of this project. What we would essentially potentially be doing is deferring indefinitely launching the project because we wouldn't be clear about cost. The one thing this thing does very specifically is it allocates the cost. It does not, with any specificity, explain how we're going to spend that money, and that is the process that we're going to need your guidance going forward. But can you separate out the, can you, as you're giving us advice today, can you separate out those two issues?
It's a difficult decision, and I say this because there have been monies thrown or committed to other plans since the Model CBA began. Those did not use the formula, and I would venture to guess that they are not nearly as successful as the one that had the Model CBA used. Now, if you propose to commit $1 million, I'd say if that's a hang-up or 1%, yeah, 1%, saw that, you would take it. If you propose to commit the $1 million, I would say set it aside, but don't commit it to a process until you have the proper information in front of you to make that call as to where, how that money will be utilized.
Well, yeah. let me jump in there, and we'll get Fred to respond. But when I read this draft resolution, I don't think we've committed to a process. As I understand this resolution, it was to set a parameter that we're going to spend 1%. And then come to your commission and to the community and say, well, we've got, as it says in the resolution, we have a number of processes underway and that we're utilizing now to improve the utilization of MWESP firms. Go look at those and fit them into a budget of 1%. So I'll get the drafters of the resolution to give their version of it, but that was how I read it. Is this doesn't say how, this just says how much.
Mayor, if I may, for the record, that's what concerns me. You have a model, you have a process, and yet multiple times over the last 2 years, there have been other proposals that didn't use the model, didn't have the data in front of them. So my concern is that it is too loosely designed and does not have the language in the model CBA to help direct the money to a process that the folks that worked on it help.
And to clarify, the parks process was not required under the previous resolution. The previous resolution referenced projects of at least $15 million that we would use the CBA. So that's why we used a modified process for the two smaller parks projects. I share your concerns on this bigger one. It seems like the 2012 resolution did call for a more extensive process. Thank you.
Thanks. Good morning.
Morning. Members of the council, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm here today as a member of the commission of the ECPC. One of the recommendations that I would like to present and put forward for adoption and implementation, it's the five recommendations items as per the City of Portland auditor, the Audit Services Division of the City Procurement Process for Intervention. So in order to make a meaningful contribution to leveling the playing field is of essence in the adoption and implementation of those recommendations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Maureen.
Thank you, Council, for allowing me to be here today. And I would like to move or speak to the third recommendation. And in order for us, our commission, to be effective in analyzing data and collecting the information, a half-time person is not enough. And we need a full-time staff for us to get all the data that we need for moving forward.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Commissioners, for having us here today. I'm Maurice Romming, one of the commissioners for the ECPC. And one of the things, as far as with this resolution, I also feel it's too vague and would like to have that postponed. I think that the dollar value that's identified, there's not enough clarity as far as how those dollars are being used, what the leverage points. I know in the CBA, there's a lot of leverage, so dollars that were committed were be able to be leveraged through the pre-apprenticeship programs and a series of other social equity groups and members. And so I don't see any leverage positions there. I see a dollar that's just being allocated, almost seems 1%, although it sounds like a good number. We really don't know if 1% is too much or too little. And so I'd like to have a little bit more conversation about what the actual dollars, what the right fit is, and how we could use those, leverage those dollars.
So, Maurice, let me just offer a suggestion, because I think there may be more agreement here than disagreement, but there's also trust but verify, and then there's who's at the table making the decisions. So we haven't had a work session on CBAs. We haven't had the council presentation on CBAs and our track record. We haven't had a council work session on a range of contract issues, including, frankly, inviting this city chartered panel to come and advise us. And you have, I think, four or five recommendations today. And what we have before us is simply an aspirational goal to set aside 1%, and Fred is being admonished to whatever it is to stay within the budget. If the council were to proceed today by adopting a resolution that says we are spending $1 million, 1%, he said we could spend less too. We're negotiating against ourselves. If we said 1%, and then it seems to me one other option, because we don't want to hold this project in abeyance. We don't have 6 months to a year to continue to work. What if we adopted the resolution with a clear process for incorporating your voices in the crafting of how the money would be spent in the context of lessons learned from the CBA and whatever advice you have for us about how to maximize these investments, because that's the goal. Everyone here shares the same goal of making sure that at the end of the process, as many people as possible benefit, get apprenticeship training, create opportunity, have a chance to develop their skills, participate in a major capital project. Can't we do both? Can't we set the goal and then agree to sit down and hammer out the details? And if not, why not?
You know, I think it's a complicated question and a complicated answer, and I try to be brief. Because of the way we're looking at trying to incorporate the community organizations and the pre-apprenticeship organizations and the trades themselves to have that flow through. We have a lot of communications between all those groups in order to say, okay, what do you need to make sure that there's outreach, adequate outreach, to make sure that people that historically have been underutilized can have those opportunities and the awareness of the opportunities. And then you look at the contractors and say, how does technical assistance actually work for those contractors that you look at as far as this particular type of project. So because you're asking so many people so many questions, I sit on the community benefits plan. I chair that committee. I also sit on the labor management oversight committee for the community benefits agreement. So it's really, I think, it's really difficult to kind of put ourselves in that box and say, okay, this is where we're going to sit. Because at the end of the day, until we get all the input from all those groups, we really don't know whether or not 1% is enough or 1% is not enough. And so I think that by having that earlier conversation, get the input from everyone so that we can all agree that this is the way that we're moving forward and this is the dollars that we feel like we need to actually have the most success, I think is vital to have a successful program.
So, isn't that just inviting the first budget overrun? Because the committee's not going to come back and say you should spend less than 1%. If anything, they're going to say more than 1%.
So I would hope that by leveraging dollars and actually having input, I think that we could actually know where those dollars are being spent. Right now we're saying 1%, but we're not saying whether or not that 1%, what percentage of that 1% is actually going for technical assistance. What actually is going for outreach for people that are interested in this industry? What percent is actually going to help the pre-apprenticeship programs? I think that's the, once we get the input from those groups, I think then we could actually come up with, and we'd hope that it'd be less than 1%.
So you can accept a 1% ceiling and work on the allocation amongst all those activities within that 1%?
Well, I guess the question I would have for you, how did you come up with 1%? What was the basis to determine 1%? Because if that's what we're trying to determine ourselves as a group, as individuals and community, to determine a fair, equitable percentage. Now, is it a fair 1%? I don't know, because we don't have the data and the people to come up with a number. So then my question to you will be, it's how do you determine that 1% is equitable for what we're trying to do?
All right, we'll get the staff to respond to that as to how they came up with 1%.
So Mr. Birch and Mr. Rahman, you both worked a lot with me in 2012 on setting up that previous community benefits agreement. I don't have the exhibit to the resolution in front of me right now. Can you refresh all of our memories as to how we decided on the level of support in the model CBA?
And so the model CBA was a little different, because that was a community coming to the mayor and the commissioners with a concept. It was bubbled up from the community coming and saying, this is what we feel. And so 4 years prior to bringing that to you, we actually had those conversations with all the participating parties that you saw, and that's where we had came up and said, okay, we feel like this is a good number for these types of projects. This is a different project. I think that we can come up with a number that actually can meet or exceed goals. And I just have a few stats. I know that you guys haven't seen this, but as far as for minority apprenticeship participation, the goal is set at 18% on the Kelly Butte project. We went over 50% and the project's complete for African-American firms participating on the Kelly Butte project and the maintenance facility project. That dollar value exceeded that which was valued at the entire period of the disparity study. So we have a model that works. It has a lot of players involved. And so it's just a matter of making sure that whatever we're setting, we're utilizing taxpayer dollars the most effectively that we possibly can. I feel like we can do that. I think that we need more time to be able to set up and have that conversation with all the stakeholders. And I think that in the comment of whether 1% is the right number, we don't know that. And then, we don't know where that number came from either.
Okay, well, we'll get them to respond. Thank you very much. Other points that any of you want to make
sure? I think, in general, to point out is that, in general, the commission, the EC group, and individuals, we're all interested in doing the maximum for the less, because we don't want to have a handout. We don't want to perceive as that. We want to do the right thing as the commission. And that's what we're interested on, is making sure that 1% that you get the best for the bang, and that you get out something out of it, and included ourselves, is the maximum benefit allowed.
So, Marcella, you've been working in this field for a long time, and you have tremendous credibility on this issue with me. So,
thank you.
We all share a set of values. We're trying to figure out the best way forward. Council adopted a CBA framework and said we encourage the city to experiment with this model. It was not handed down biblically. It was a concept. And with all due humility, we expected to refine it and make it better. We expected it would have weaknesses and strengths. The problem is we don't currently have that data. It does not help the discussion to cherry-pick numbers and say this proves it's been successful. We have to have an independent review of these projects to figure out what worked and what didn't, because you are just as committed as we are to fixing, to making it work as well as possible. So that has not been done yet. But we can all pull numbers, and we can put numbers out there and say this proves the point. until we have an independent review, none of us here up here can make that judgment.
Correct.
Other than we're committed to the outcomes, which is expanding opportunity. And what I'll want to see when we scrub the numbers is, has it really resulted in people benefiting, or are we creating a lot of process along the way? Is it people or middle people? Is it institutions taking their piece or not getting to people on the ground? That's one of the questions I'm going to have, because I don't want to create bureaucracy around this process and not see the money filter through to people. And frankly, not a single person in this room can answer that question right now until there's been an independent review. So we have to do something about this building or it's going to fall down. I have never in my 7 years on the council, and you'll correct me, Michael, I do not remember any time where the council has said specifically 1% is going to go to creating opportunity. I have often heard that there's not enough accountability. Well, you can't be more accountable than having a percentage. You can agree or disagree with the percentage. I would not argue it should go less, but I would say Dan's point about it may be a ceiling, but maybe 1% is the right number. We'll ask OMF about that. But for purposes of moving this project forward, we have to have some agreement as to how we're going to create opportunity. And the proposal on the table is 1%. And what I'm hearing is not sure what 1% means and want to look at the details. And to me, that's what we would do over the next year with your assistance to get that right. So I don't see us work at odds here. I think it's a different approach, perhaps, but I think we share the same outcome. And one of the important things for me is that we once and for all decide the question of the fate of the Portland building. Because if it's not this issue, it'll be another issue, and we'll be back here a year or 2 years from now still futzing on this, and I'm done futzing. Either we're going to fix it or we're going to do something else, but in fairness, we've got to call the question. Even Portlandia is beginning to shed tears up there as she's watching. And remember, Bug Clark famously said on Portlandia's birthday that she's held up better than the building, which was a heck of a comment. And I think it's incumbent on us to act. So I appreciate your comment, your testimony.
Thank you all very much. We appreciate your willingness to do this work with us. Thank you.
As you're calling the next three up, go ahead.
Three more.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Three more. And
they are Jeff Moreland, Hai Pei, and Nate McCory.
While they're coming up, we'll just do a time check here. Since this is the end of public testimony on this, I'm going to propose that we get staff back up and answer questions and see if the council is ready to proceed. We have some other things on our agenda today. My proposal would be that we try to work till 1. And try to get it all done by 1. If we can't, we'll probably I have a 1:30 and Commissioner Fritz and I have a 2, so we might need to come back at 2 and be late for that. We'll figure that out, but I know it's
that.
Yeah, I think we should try.
I can't come back at 2.
You can't come back at 2. Okay, so we're not coming back. So what we'll do is here's my proposal, then we'll work till 1, and anything that has to be carried over will be carried over to tomorrow afternoon because we have a council meeting tomorrow afternoon.
Good.
Does that work?
That's good.
Okay, just had to do our housekeeping. Sorry, bear with us, and welcome. Who'd like to be first?
Hi, my name is Hai Pei. Actually, I'm the owner of the Galleries Gift Sundry Shop at Portland Building, which is I have the same situation. Who Chang Sim. So my father bought this store since 1991, so I used to work with him since that time, which is a long time, and my father passed away 10 years ago. And right now, since 1 year ago, we're trying to sell the business because it's slowing down and, you know, I cannot work there anymore. But cannot get a this long lease term contract anymore, so we kind of struggle it right now, so I just wanna please understand our situation, and that store has kind of our family business, so yeah, please understand, and that's what I came for it, and thank you for bringing to speak our situation. So,
thank you very much. We look forward to working with you. Thank you. Who'd like to be next?
I'll go next. My name is Nate McCoy. I'm the executive director of NAMAC Oregon, which is an advocacy and membership group that represents minority contractors in our community. we're really about trying to eliminate barriers to full and profitable participation on public and private projects. I'm really here today to commend the commissioners and mayor for the appointment of the Equitable Contracting Commission. That's moving the right step to ensure accountability and transparency in the process. A little bit about my background. I've been afforded the opportunity to have worked for both Commissioner Dan Salzman as well as Nick Fish with the Portland Housing Bureau, where I was a senior construction manager overseeing a lot of the housing projects. They had a great opportunity to give me leadership and voice to the community working with minority contractors. And I can tell you that without a CBA, without a lot of these community benefits plans, the Bureau was able to excel in a lot of ways within our contracting community and really supporting the growth and capacity building of a lot of minority contractors. Within NAMAC Oregon, we represent, I would argue, a bulk of the minority contractors in the community. And we see this project as an opportunity to engage effectively in a way to advance a lot of the stuff we're talking about today. I'm very moved by a lot of Nick Fish's comments related to where we are in this process. To date, NAMAC Oregon has not once been identified as somebody who could contribute to this conversation. We're very well positioned to be a part of this conversation, so I'm really here in a way to put us on the radar for you guys, that we're here to be a part of the conversation, help work out the 1% allocation in any way that it might direct funding in the appropriate areas. I would say that as we're collecting data and trying to really do research on the effective use of a CBA, if that is the direction we want to go, that we also start tracking not only just the apprenticeship and workforce hours that are participated on projects, but also looking at what people are doing when they journey out. Are these people getting real jobs? Are these people being tracked and successfully finding work and not just sitting in a hall and not really being utilized? ODOT, BOLI, a lot of other organizations are doing research with PSU. I've had a chance to meet with some of those researchers, and we're finding that there's not a lot of research and data talking about are people retaining jobs. You know, workforce and training programs are great, and they should be used, but ultimately, if you go through these programs and you're not afforded a real job and a real opportunity, what have we done for our community? So as we think about these community benefits, plans, agreements, I think we should also spend time thinking about how we continue with these people who go through these trades and ensuring that they're actually filling, you know, these jobs. Because as most minority contractors will tell you, the more capacity they build within their business, the more they're going to recruit and retain people that look like them in their communities. So if people aren't getting opportunities, we're not creating jobs. So that's kind of what we're about, and we want to make sure that we're a part of this conversation. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Jeff Moreland. I'm the owner of Raymore Construction. We're a large employer. We employ 35 people. 90% of our employees are minority, either Hispanic or African-American. I'm also on the board of National Association of Minority Contractors. And the issue that I really have today is, like has been said, and one of the comments that you made, Commissioner Fish, is my concern over the fact that we're looking at broadening things without having the data. And I know the way the resolution is written, the third resolution is written, but I also heard the testimony of Mr. Baugh and Mr. Miller, which that just concerns me, that we don't know how it's currently, you know, working, especially when we historically have had, you know, you look at the city auditor's report and you look at a lot of the baseline numbers, and there's just concern about how minorities have benefited and women have benefited in the contracting community. And me being a contractor for 20 years, I've witnessed a lot of this. So my concern for you guys as a commission is, I know you have to move forward with it, but my concern is the way it's written and the testimony of the people that wrote it is broadening something and opening it up more without vetting out whether what's happening is fixing the issues that were at hand in the beginning. And that's my concern.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you both. Okay, anyone else wants to speak on this item? Come on up.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog PDX. I'm a little bit skeptical myself on this Portland building project. I think when we start reaching a number of $195 million on reconstruction, there needs to be a number when we meet that we say, hey, maybe we need to look at building something new. I mean, this is too high a price. I'm really surprised that the building was even put on the historical status. I do want to have Portlandia moved. I want to have the Portland building put up for sale. I'd like to see some prices that we come in at. I want to look at the Multnomah County Courthouse, work with Multnomah County to purchase that property. I want to build a brand new building in that location. And I want to use the remaining funds when we sell the Portland building to purchase that Multnomah County Courthouse and also to apply additional funds to building in the new building. If we go in that direction, the Portland building can remain there, keep the employees there, work with Multnomah County in a plan that we can build something new. $195 million to reconstruct this building, to me, it's outrageous. It's outrageous. We need to look at the cost of building something new. I haven't heard any numbers. Why aren't we hearing numbers on that? What is the difference? What's the difference in the value there? I want to see a new building built. I want to see something brand new. Can we get a different resource to help build that building, such as they're doing on the new courthouse they're building from the state? Are there ways to get them to match some money on this? Why not build something new? Why not, at this time, admit that that was a mistake, the Portland building? It hasn't lasted a tremendous amount of years. We all agree on that. If anybody in this room disagrees, that building should have lasted at least 75 plus years. Has it done that? No, it hasn't. Is it up to today's seismic standards? Absolutely not. Then why should we dump a tremendous amount of more money in there when we can possibly build something new, get much more longevity out of it? And I think, in my opinion, it's going to be more value added to the city to do that. And to hold on to this building, it does not make any sense to me. And the $195 million, I would like to see various bids on that, because that number just seems very outrageous to me at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, let's bring Fred back up and other staff. Oh, I'm sorry. Just quickly, please.
Thank you, Council. I would like to thank Lightning for his incredible devotion to the city and everything he has done. I was also particularly moved by Crystal Olinsky's speech about allocating money for homeless resources. Just to tell you about my experience, last night I slept in a box around 14th with newspapers about your emergency declaration. And they kept me somewhat warm, and that's because I don't have a affordable housing in this city. And I think this passionate need for jobs and housing are incredibly important, and I'm incredibly important by the move towards equity in construction, and I'm very impressed with that. But I think when you decide to patch together something that's somewhat broken, you can run into a lot of problems. And I think Lightning's point about the architecture is very compelling, and I think a full review of the structure would be helpful towards having a long-standing, permanent, good governance in the city, which we clearly don't have. We have a historic loss of faith. The public feels that there's been breach of trust on numerous issues. So I think building a firm foundation will be good. A house on sand or rocks, some kind of phrase like that. And I want you to know I'm doing well and I'm committed to this city too, but I'm living far away because of the incredible price of housing, including the price of my family's emotional problems. But I am really happy to be here and honored to see you all, and hope you make the right decision, and hope you give due respect to all of the excellent points that have been made here. And I would like to see some recognition for the citizen activists who spend a lot of time and dedication. And I find these meetings very difficult, and very hard to pay attention, very challenging issues. And I want to thank you for your leadership, too, because I think often you are victimized and misunderstood and probably have very extremely difficult decisions to make. But I think this definitely is one of them, and it deserves a great deal of patience and good ideas to come from many different kinds of people, so we can actually build a city that is not a laughingstock in terms of this massive runaway gentrification and pushing people out of the city
and this sort of, I don't know what it's going to be, San Francisco.
Thank you. Take care. Okay, Fred, come on up and bring any folks that are needed to address some of the questions and issues that have come up, including the most recent ones, which are how do we get to 1% in this proposed 1064 resolution